This is the Tax Update for February 11, 2008. This week, transforming rental income to self-employment income. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and supporting document may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio file. Such prohibited use include using the podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.linebergservices.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Visit them on the web at www.linebergservices.com. This week, we take a look at a change that was made last May in the law, but for which there has been clarification published by the IRS in, of all places, the instructions to Form 1065, as well a recent webcast and also exists as a podcast on Tax Talk Today gave us some additional guidance and discussion related to this area that we're going to talk about. And what we're going to talk about here is a question of qualified joint ventures. And perhaps a change in the taxation of the income of a qualified joint venture when it elects to be treated as a qualified joint venture, the difference in how self-employment tax is treated as opposed to that same enterprise being treated as a partnership and being taxed on the income flowing through to the partners. Now, the Small Business Work Opportunity Tax Act of 2007 had a provision in it that added Section 761F to the Internal Revenue Code that allowed husband and wife jointly owned enterprises, basically LLCs, unincorporated enterprises, basically aimed at LLCs, to be treated as a qualified joint venture and eliminate the need to file a Form 1065. Now, most of the coverage to date concentrated on the fact that this got rid of the need to file that partnership return, but added the complexity of ending up with reporting the separate information for each spouse on the individual Form 1040. In fact, doing two Schedule Cs. The provision was apparently meant by Congress to provide some sort of rough equivalence to what was provided by the IRS for those individuals living in community property states, which had single-member LLCs that were considered community property income, therefore joint ownership, under Revenue Procedure 2000-269. Now, if you remember that revenue procedure in a community property state, we're allowed to essentially either file a partnership return or ignore the fact the LLC exists and just report the item directly on a Form 1040. And we're able to do that essentially at will from year to year, recognizing either the formation of the partnership or the liquidation of the partnership of when we go from one form to another from year to year. But a less notice provision of this, there was Act Section 8215 that put this in place. And in fact, Section 761F was added by Act Section 8215A. What didn't get as much coverage, at least as any that I remember hearing, but was covered in some depth on the Tax Talk Today presentation, webcast, and podcast, and we're going to talk about here today, is the provision in Section 8215B that made changes to the treatment for self-employment tax purposes under Section 1402. Now, in the instructions to the 2007 Form 1065, the IRS pointed out this change, and it significantly changes the treatment of husband and wife owned rental properties in LLCs, where the spouses attempt to avoid filing the partnership return by electing qualified joint venture treatment. Now, I paid attention to that particular webcast because a individual who was with the IRS, Kurt Freeman, who had participated in online forums I'd been involved in a number of years ago, was on the program. So I was listening to him, and when he brought up the self-employment tax treatment that is described in the instructions, and by the way, Kurt's position at the IRS essentially puts him in charge of the instructions. When he described the position there, suddenly it was like, you know, that's interesting, and I know that Kurt doesn't usually just shoot from the hip or get these things wrong, so I need to go back and restudy the provision and check out, and we'll go through the details about what changed and why it changed. Now, the Small Business Work Opportunity Tax Act of 2007, Section 8215A, added Section 761F to the code, as we mentioned. And that provision provided that, in general, if we have a qualified joint venture and we essentially elect to treat it as a qualified joint venture, such a joint venture is not treated as a partnership. All the items of income, gain, loss, deduction, credits are going to be divided between the spouses according to the code in accordance with their respective interest in the venture. And each spouse shall take into account such spouse's respective share of the items as if they were attributable to a trade or business conducted by such spouse as a sole proprietor. Now, that's the three-prong provisions we find in Section 761F. Now, Section 761F2 tells us what is a qualified joint venture. And to be that, the only members of the joint venture are a husband and wife. So we have to have our LLC, the only owners are husband and wife. No restriction here on the nature of the ownership, unlike Revenue Procedure 2269 that only applied to property held as community property. This applies to property held by husband and wife as the only owners. Both spouses must materially participate within the meaning of Section 469H. That's the passive activity loss rules, without regard to paragraph 5 under that section. What that means indirectly is a passive activity. We are allowed to, if I actively participate in a trade or business, the fact that my wife may do nothing in that trade or business does not mean she is treated as passive with regard to that. Rather, Section 469H5 provides that she's attributed my activity. Similarly, it provides that if she's actively involved in a trade or business that I'm not involved in, I basically get her material participation on me, so I qualify as materially participating. This provision says ignore that spousal issue and make each spouse stand alone to be materially participating. That also, note, is not a requirement of Revenue Procedure 2269. And third, both spouses must elect the application of this subsection. Now, that was an issue that a lot of us concentrated on when this came down, because obviously the question becomes, how do we elect? How do we elect to do it? And secondly, what's that nature of each spouse's allocable share of these items? It was clear we needed some IRS guidance here. For instance, how are we going to elect? That's something the IRS has to tell us. And perhaps some clarification about the look on how we handle the respective shares. Now, the IRS did give guidance, it turns out, before the end of last year, but not in any official pronouncement, no revenue procedure here or notice or announcement, but rather in the instructions to Form 1065. Page 2 of the Form 1065 instructions, the IRS for this year outlined the general rule that business activities conducted in a firm jointly owned by a husband and wife create a partnership that requires the filing of Form 1065. The instructions on page 2 specifically contain a paragraph that starts a section labeled husband-wife business. And the first sentence we run into there says, generally, if you and your spouse jointly own and operate an unincorporated business and share in the profits and losses, you are partners in a partnership and you must file Form 1065. Now, the Joint Committee on Taxation's report on the provision of 761F indicates that that was not meant to change prior law for the general treatment of what is a partnership. In fact, the Joint Committee on Taxation's report states the provision is not intended to change the determination under present law of whether an entity is a partnership for federal tax purposes without regard to the election provided by the provision. Now, as such, what that means is, and what the IRS is reiterating here is, under the old rules and the requirements under Section 7701, if we had a trade or business carried on by a husband and wife in a jointly owned enterprise, you counted the number of owners. We had two. That made it a partnership and required a Form 1065 generally to be filed. Now, note, we have to remember one key issue. Even if you clear that hurdle, not all jointly owned entities that conduct a trade or business or have financial activities or those items are necessarily required to follow 1065. Section 761A provides an election out of treatment under subchapter K for some qualified entities. That particular requirement would allow a husband and wife partnership that was formed for investment purposes only and not for the active conduct of business to elect out of subchapter K in partnership treatment if the income could be adequately determined without the need for a partnership calculation. Now, that makes sense when you think about it, because since we would be reporting it on a joint Form 1040, in that particular case, usually if everything flows onto that 1040, we're going to end up with the same result in most cases as if we had actually prepared a separate partnership return. Note, no active trade or business. Well, that would usually cover a rental real estate property, because we're going to have maybe the conduct, but not the active conduct of a trade or business under that particular term. And it's an investment partnership only. So, hey, we can report that rental on the Schedule E by electing through 761A, it would appear. However, to do that, we did have to make an election in accordance with Regulation 1.7612. And that provides that generally we should elect by doing so by the first year we have this jointly owned enterprise. We elect, we file a partnership return noting that we're electing out. And after that, and in the future, you know, all parties agree that we're not going to be filing partnership returns. However, note there is a dumb but lucky provision, shall we call it, of Regulation 1.761-2BII. That bails out such entities even if they were unaware of the need to make and never made a formal election. The election is made if, in fact, we had gone ahead and always treated it as if we'd elected out of subchapter K, and all parties have reported that way. Well, we report it directly on the Form 1040, and we reported all the income, and it's been properly reported. Then we have a deemed election under 761. Now, that deemed election is just as good as the other election. In essence, we have made the election, or deemed to have made it, by having reported in that fashion, as long as we clear all the hurdles. And a husband and wife, that'd be fairly simple to do. Now, a key factor to note is the election is one that's binding on the entity until it either no longer qualifies or it gets the permission of the IRS to revoke that election. If you want to permission to get out of the 761A, and remember, this election has been in the code for a long time, you have to file a request to get out of that election by no later than the first 30 days into the tax year you want the election out to apply for. So we have to ask for permission. And as of this date, it's too late to elect out for 2008, because we're already more than 30 days into 2008 as you're listening to this podcast. However, new section 761F, now we go down further in 761, we added this provision, gives us another way out of filing Form 1065, a method that can be used either in lieu of section 761A. If an entity qualified under 761A, we could use 761F instead of A, or it can be used by entities that might fail to meet 761A's requirements because there is the active conduct of a trade or business going on, and it doesn't meet one of the other criteria for qualifying for exclusion under 761A. The instructions to Form 1065 go on to describe that option. Following the sentence we discussed earlier, it tells us there's an exception, qualified joint venture. And that section of the instruction states, beginning in 2007, if you and your spouse materially participate as the only members of a jointly owned and operating business, and you file a joint return for the tax year, you can make an election to be treated as a qualified joint venture instead of a partnership. By making the election, you will not be required to file Form 1065 for any year the election is in effect, and you will instead report the income and deductions directly on your joint return. To make this election, you must divide all items of income, gain, loss, deduction, and credit between you and your spouse in accordance with your respective interests in the venture. Each of you must file a separate Schedule C, CEZ, or F. On each line of your separate Schedule C, CEZ, or F, you must enter your share of the applicable income, deduction, or loss. Each of you must also must file a separate Schedule SE to pay self-employment tax. That answered one of the key questions we had on this all through the end of this year, and of last year. How are we going to make this election? The IRS tells us very simply, you make the election by simply not filing a Form 1065, and by then reporting on separate Schedule Cs on the Form 1040 of the jointly filed return of the two individuals, husband and wife. In the January 8th online webcast from Tax Talk Today, Kurt Freeman actually specifically noted that no final Form 1065 be filed for an entity that had previously filed Form 1065. Now, a discussion ensued after that point about, well, isn't that going to cause us some potential problems with the IRS computer looking for a 1065 and sending notices out? And the conclusion reached in the show was, yeah, it's probably going to cause you a problem, and there's really no easy way out of that. You're simply going to have to deal with it. When the notice comes, you're going to have to send a letter back stating that, you know, pursuant to these instructions, you've elected out of partnership treatment or 761F, and the instructions say that election is made by filing these two Schedule Cs. Therefore, there no longer is an obligation to file the Form 1065. Now, while the question of what exactly constitutes each spouse's respective shares indirectly addressed, it would seem at this point the most reasonable way, at least in my view, to look at this is, since you didn't elect out of Subchapter K, the rules for Subchapter K still apply in terms of determining what each partner's respective share of income, deductions, etc. are. And for that reason, you would look at the same rules we always look at to determine how much is allocable to each spouse for the various items, including the equivalent of the non-separately stated items of income or expense, or the summary amounts for separately reported items. Now, it would appear also, therefore, the rest of the rules under Subchapter K for recognize the validity of allocations would also apply. That means maintenance of capital accounts in order to have substantial economic effect for recognition of the special allocations that may be made, or we have to make a determination in accordance with the partner's economics interests in the entity. So one of those two is going to be required to make the allocations have effect under Section 704, and it would appear at least that 704 will still be our guidance to determine how much is allocable to each of the two spouses based upon their partnership agreement, and upon whether the special allocations that may be made can be recognized for validity. But note that if you previously reported this jointly owned entity not on a Form 1065, but rather on a Schedule E, you probably, arguably, can't move into Section 761F treatment unless you get the IRS permission to change the treatment, get back under Subchapter K, and then file your tax return. Then file basically the separately reported information on the individual return to get you back under 761F. Nothing so far tells us that a 761A electing entity for the husband and wife can jump directly to 761F. Rather, it would appear that since arguably they're outside of Subchapter K, that they would need to elect their way back in so that they're under 761, so that therefore they could then apply 761F. Or at least I should say it's certainly not clear they can make use of 761F. Now, in the alternative, though, if you're using Revenue Ruling 2000-269, you wouldn't have this potential problem. That ruling clearly allows a taxpayer to essentially go from ignoring the fact that they had a partnership to filing as a partnership on an annual basis. And all we have to do is recognize the tax consequences that might result from the deemed formation of the partnership under Section 721. Well, presuming we do that, we could then, quote, form the partnership, unquote, and then elect under 761F to treat it as a qualified joint venture, report the items separately to husband and wife. Now, you may say that sounds like a wonderful theoretical discussion because since we weren't reporting on a 1065 anyway, what would be the point of getting under Section 761F anyway, and what's the difference? Well, it turns out there is a difference, and this is explained by the IRS in the next paragraph to their instructions. Because, as noted, there was another part of the code section of the Act section 8215 called 8215B. And that modified Section 1402, which is the section on definition of self-employment income. But let's go to the instructions to give you the answer as to what we're facing very quickly. If you and your spouse make the election for your rental real estate business, you much easier report your share of income and deductions on Schedule C or CEZ instead of Schedule E. That might seem surprising to you, but we'll go on. There's a reason for this. Although rental real estate income generally is not included in net earnings from self-employment, you and your spouse each must take into account your share of the income and deductions from the rental real estate business in figuring your net earnings from self-employment on Schedule SE. Now, some people may go, how did that happen? Wasn't the whole point of this to get around any issues and just, you know, treat it and allow us to ignore that entity? And the answer was, well, no. Congress made a specific change to 760 to 1402 A in turn when they passed this provision, adding section 1402 A17. Now we'll get to why that's important, but we first have to review the basics of where we were on 1402. Conducting of a rental real estate operation is a business activity. And if you think, no, it's not, the answer is yes, it is. Think about the ability to carry back a net operating loss. We carry back net operating losses, a loss from rental activity that's allowed to be deducted on the return is treated as a business loss for purposes of the NOL rules. Remember that? We can only carry back business activities. It's not that rental real estate's not a trade or business, why it escapes self-employment tax. Now, the general rule under 1402A is that the term net earnings for self-employment means the gross income derived from an individual by an individual from any trade or business carried on by such individual, less the deductions allowed by this subtitle, which are attributable to such trade or business, plus his distributive share, whether or not distributed, of income or loss described in section 702A8 from any trade or business carried on by a partnership of which he is a member. Now, that's the two-level test we've talked about before for what is self-employment income. For the individual, we look for the conduct of a trade or business by the individual. And for a partnership, we test it at the partnership level. But rental real estate is generally a trade or business. And Code Section 1402 recognizes this because it creates a specific carve-out at Section 1402A1. And that tells us we get to exclude rentals from real estate and from personal property rent with such real estate, including such rentals paid in crop shares, together with the deductions attributable thereto, unless the rentals are received in the course of a trade or business as a real estate dealer, and some other exceptions that go through the rest of 1402A1. But 1402A1 provides a general rule that if your trade or business is you're renting real estate, then that's not self-employment income. So if we have the rental property in a partnership, despite the fact that the general rule of 1402A provides that it would be subject to SE tax, A1 overrides that general rule by giving us an exception, and therefore it's not considered self-employment income. So what's the problem when 761F's involved? I mean, if we held it outside of a partnership, it wasn't subject to self-employment tax. If we held it and reported it in a partnership, it's not subject to self-employment tax. Seems like rental income is not subject to self-employment tax, except it appears, and not only it appears, except when Section 761F is involved. The answer lies in Act Section 8215B. Remember, that's the second part that people glanced over, which added an exception to the exception. The new law added Section 1402A17, which provides, notwithstanding the preceding provisions of this subsection, which would include A1, each spouse's share of income or loss from a qualified joint venture shall be taken into account as provided in Section 761F in determining net earnings from self-employment of such spouse. Section 1402A17 removes all of the exceptions above it whenever we're dealing with net earnings from a qualified joint venture. One of those items above it is A1, the rental. In fact, the first one and the main one is A1, the rental. So if we make the election, the income or loss from the rental goes against self-employment income. Now, that may be good news or bad news depending on your situation or goal, but it's certainly important to know the effects there and realize it. Now, what about if I want, because what was discussed during the program, and I think what's important to remember is If it is including the calculation of net self-employment income, that would also mean that a loss from the rental property that's allowable as a deduction would also be considered a reduction of self-employment income for the year in question. Therefore, there may be an impact on self-employment income, especially if you have a taxpayer who has self-employment income that's not high enough to get them above the FICA limitation. So we're no longer talking about the self-employment tax as it applies to the Medicare tax, but rather the full double whammy of the Medicare tax and the FICA, essentially for the old age and survivors account, meaning that this could be worth a quite a hefty deduction. Each dollar of rental loss allowed could give us a pretty good return, because that's a relatively high tax rate for the individuals in that range where they're paying the self-employment tax plus ordinary income rates. Now, the other side of that equation obviously is once your rental shows income, you now have self-employment income adding to the above. Well, you say, well, that's okay. I'll just be in this provision for the years in which I have a net loss, and then I'll get out of it in the years in which it turns to income. Not so quickly. The IRS tells us in the instructions that unlike Revenue Procedure 2002-69's treatment, you can't just decide you want out and file a Form 1065 next year. The instructions note that once made, the election cannot be revoked without IRS consent. If you and your spouse filed a Form 1065 for the year prior to the election, you do not need to amend that return or file a final Form 1065 for the year the election takes effect. However, the partnership terminates at the end of the tax year immediately preceding the year the election takes effect. As the instructions make clear, you have a termination event. You would look at the tax treatment of that potential termination of the partnership when you file under the qualified joint venture, presuming you've been filing a 1065 before. Now, aside, while it's clear that we would need permission to terminate it as husband and wife owners, it would also appear that if we no longer qualified to be a qualified joint venture, the treatment would cease, much as an S-corporation status ends if the S-corporation ends up with a corporate shareholder. Under the current law, it would appear if, like the S-corporation, the taxpayers transferred any interest to a party other than themselves, such as gifting a 1% interest to a third party or to a corporation formed by one or both spouses, that would trigger a violation of Section 751A(f)(2)(a)'s requirement that the entity be owned only by the husband and wife, and would end the treatment as a qualified joint venture. But before you decide, aha, there's no big deal, please remember that the IRS always retains the hammer of Regulation Section 1.701-2, the Partnership Anti-Abuse Regulation. And the IRS could argue that your transfer of a minimal interest to a disqualified entity in order to suddenly come under Subchapter K's allocation of treating that as not SE income would violate the intent of Subchapter K. That would be true when it would appear the only effect is to get out of self-employment tax once we had income coming from this entity. So be aware that getting too cute there may cause you problems. As well, realize all we have right now are the instructions. The IRS still has the ability to write regulations, and we would presume someday will write regulations implementing this section, that also may tell us getting out may not be quite as easy as you might hope for just by reading the code. What's important to note about all of this is an election under 761F have more consequences than might have been expected from our initial review of the law. And that considers both whether that argues against using the option or in some cases in favor of using the option. Because clients, many cases, may have a choice. Well, they'll always have a choice of either doing this or filing the partnership return. But you may also have the fact that there may be other options. For instance, nothing in Section 751F says it cannot be used by spouses in a community property state. Therefore, you may have the option of using Section 761F or Section Revenue Procedure 2002-69 if we want to get rid of filing a 1065. Obviously, we also have the option of filing the 1065. It is also possible that we could face a situation where Section 761A might apply either instead of Revenue Rulings 2002 Revenue Procedure 2000-269, or in addition to 2000-269. If, in fact, the taxpayer has all the options, you would need to discuss with your client the consequences of reporting as a partnership under Form 1065, reporting as a qualified joint venture under 761F, reporting or electing out of Subchapter K under 761A, or using Revenue Procedure 2000-269 to get around the partnership reporting requirements that it gives us the option to potentially come back in. Clients are going to have to be concerned about the possible consequences, both positive and negative. Obviously, there's an impact on self-employment taxes. Obviously, there's also an impact on the cost of compliance, because 761F is going to require us to do two Schedule Cs, but we skip a 1065. If we do the 2000-269, we may skip both problems, or 761A may allow us to skip both problems. 761A binds us, though, to needing the IRS's permission to get back out of that and get back under Subchapter K. 761F also requires the IRS permission to go back and get back under a traditional partnership structure. Revenue Ruling 2000-269 requires no permission either way, but doesn't give us a self-employment tax treatment. And the partnership doesn't give us a self-employment tax treatment, but allows us to still later elect under 761 if we wanted to. So as confusing as everything is, we need to consider all those options. Also realize, and as a position as we're all very much aware of, partnerships aren't often examined by the service, not nearly as often as Schedule Cs are. And if you throw a rental real estate property with a loss on Schedule C, well, that looks like a lost Schedule C, and the IRS may be more apt to talk with you. Finally, consider whether your tax program is set up to handle this properly as well. Nothing in here seems to indicate that 761 changed the treatment of these entities for passive activity loss purposes. So it would appear we still have the $25,000 limitation on active rental real estate. Now, by definition, this would have to be active rental real estate because we're going to have to meet the material participation test that would apply if it wasn't real estate. That would appear to make it, by definition, going to meet the active participation test for the real estate. So by definition, we'd be subject to those rules. How you get your tax program to apply the $25,000 limitation to a Schedule C, well, that's for you and your tax program vendor to try to figure out how this is going to work, but it's something you need to consider if you elect the qualified joint venture. Now, as noted, this discussion came to my attention because of the Tax Talk Today program on the website www.taxtalktoday.tv. And Tax Talk Today also offers up the audio version of their presentation archived in iTunes as a podcast subscription, so you can subscribe them like you do to this podcast. You may want to consider looking at that for some guidance. Their next one's not going to come up till March. Apparently, they're taking February off. So we'll have additional guidance in that area, but there are some interesting items, especially in the archives there you can read. And you should be aware that if you watch the video version of it, you can obtain continuing education credit. So it's an interesting place to go watch for your podcast backups or for interest for tax developments in addition to this podcast. Now, this has been the Tax Update Podcast. And the Tax Update Podcast, as always, is brought to you by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. As always, Lineberg Services gives tax practitioners access to their newsletters on tax developments, and it is something you should consider looking at and consider subscribing to, again, on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. This has been the Tax Update.